Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
My husband travels for work about twice a month, sometimes more. We've been in the house for 3 years by that point, long enough that I'd stop triple checking the locks before bed. You get comfortable. That's the thing nobody warns you about. Comfort is just fear that's forgotten itself. It was a Wednesday night in February, which matters because February in our part of Ohio is dead. Not poetic dead, literally dead. The neighbors don't walk their dogs. The kids aren't outside. Everyone retreats behind doors somewhere around Thanksgiving and doesn't really come back until April. Our street, Caldwell Court, is a short cul-de-sac tucked behind a Lutheran church, 8 houses total, and in February could pass for a movie set that hadn't been used in years. Joel had flown to Atlanta for a conference. He'd be back Friday. I had 2 days. I want to stress how normal Wednesday was. I heated up leftover soup. I graded papers. I teach 7th grade English, while a true crime podcast played in the background. I showered, put on socks, and was in bed by 10:15. I was asleep before I even finished the chapter I'd opened.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
This episode's sponsored by Little Sleepies. Little Sleepies makes getting your kids dressed a lot easier. Their signature bamboo fabric is incredibly soft, breathable, and gentle on sensitive skin. It stretches so kids can move comfortably all day, from playtime to bedtime. Parents love the smart details too, like double zippers and fold-over mittens that make diaper changes and getting dressed faster and easier. And because Little Sleepies are designed to grow with your child, they last longer than typical kids' clothes. Right now, discover the ultra-soft styles families swear by. Visit littlesleepies.com and find your new favorite pajamas today.
The phone woke me at 12:48 a.m. Unknown number. Ohio area code. Different city. I let it ring. Telemarketers auto-dial at all hours now. I read that somewhere. I set my phone face down and closed my eyes. It called back at 12:51. Same number. I declined it. Turned the ringer off. And that was that. I fell back asleep annoyed but not frightened. There was nothing frightening about it yet. I didn't think about the calls Thursday morning. I made coffee, drove to school, argued with the parent over email about their son's essay grade, ate a granola bar for lunch, and drove home. Ordinary. I noticed the smell when I walked inside. Nothing strong. The ghost of something. Cigarette smoke, maybe. Or something chemical. Like a cleaning product I didn't own. I stood in the kitchen doorway and sniffed in the air like a dog. After a moment, I convinced myself it was the neighbors. Old houses share air through walls and vents in strange ways. I cracked a window above the sink and moved on. That night, I was on the couch watching television when I heard footsteps on the porch. Our porch is wood, and it pops and settles in the cold constantly. But these were even and deliberate, one after another, moving from the right side of the porch to the left, toward the large front window. I muted the TV. The footsteps stopped. I sat completely still in the blue television light, watching the window, waiting to see a silhouette. Nothing. After 2 full minutes, I breathed again. A raccoon, maybe. The cold making the wood shift. I turned the volume back up. I went to bed with the hall light on for the first time since we moved in, and I told myself it didn't mean anything. I woke up at 3:14 a.m. to the sound of knocking. Not at the front door. At the window beside my bed. 2 knocks. Deliberate. With the real weight behind them. The way a person knocks on a door when they want to be heard. Not aggressive. Almost polite. That's what made it so much worse. Something about the patience of it. I did not move. I understood, in some animal lair beneath thought, that moving would be a mistake. I lay on my side with my eyes open, staring at the far wall, and became aware that I could hear breathing just outside the glass. Or I thought I could, over the sound of my own heartbeat loud in my ears. Then a voice, quiet, conversational, mouth close to the window. "I just need a minute of your time." I bit down on the inside of my cheek to keep me from making a sound. My phone was on the nightstand, 18 inches from my hand. I moved for it slowly. The way you move when you know you're being watched. And I called 911 in the dark, with my phone against my stomach, speaking barely above breath when the dispatcher answered. She had asked me twice to speak up. Each time she asked, I was certain the voice outside the window would respond instead. The police arrived in 11 minutes. A lot can happen in 11 minutes. What actually happened was nothing, which should have made me feel better, but didn't. They walked the perimeter. They found nothing. No footprints. The ground was frozen solid. No signs of tampering at the window. One officer asked if I had any, quote, difficult people in my life. A former student's family, maybe. A neighbor dispute. The way he asked it suggested he already drafted his own explanation and just needed me to confirm it. They left at 4:30. I did not sleep. Joel came home Friday afternoon and I told him everything. He listened seriously, which I appreciated. He checked the window locks himself, drove the perimeter of the block, spoke with the neighbor directly to our left. Nobody had seen anything. That evening he said carefully, "I wonder if the stress of the semester is building up." He wasn't dismissive. He was worried about me in the wrong direction. I dropped it. I almost believed him. Saturday, I was home alone while Joel ran errands. I was at the kitchen table working when my cell phone lit up. Unknown number. Ohio area code. The same one. I answered. There was a pause. And then a man's voice said, "I left something for you. Check your mailbox." The line went dead. I want to be precise here because I've replayed this moment thousands of times. I did not go to the mailbox right away. I stood in the kitchen for 4 minutes doing nothing. Then I got my coat, went to the front door, and looked through the peephole first. The street was empty. I walked to the mailbox. Inside was a single photograph. It was printed on regular printer paper, slightly grainy, the way phone photos look when you blow them up. It was taken from outside, through a window. It was my bedroom, clearly unmistakably. The quilt, the lamp, the stack of books on my nightstand. And I was in it, asleep. I cannot tell you the exact moment in the timeline this was taken, but the hall light was off in the photo, which means it was before Thursday night, which means this started before I knew it had started. We moved out of that house within the month. We still don't know who it was. The police opened a file, collected the photograph, made a report. The unknown number traced to a prepaid phone purchased with cash at a gas station 40 minutes south of us. There was no arrest. Sometimes I think about what he said at the window. The patience of it. "I just need a minute of your time." Like it was a courtesy call. Like he was doing me a favor by knocking. I think about the fact that he had a photo of me sleeping, which means at some point, before any of this, before the calls and the footsteps and the knocking, he stood outside my bedroom window in the dark and watched me long enough to decide I was worth coming back to. And I never knew. I was asleep. I was comfortable. That's the thing nobody warns you about. I've worked the overnight shift at a hotel for going on 3 years now. It's not glamorous. You're mostly alone. You check in the occasional late arrival. You run the audit reports at 3 a.m. And you watch the clock until the morning crew relieves you at 7. I'm 24. I took the job because the differential pay was decent. And I've always been a night person. Or at least, I used to think I was. This happened about 3 weeks ago. And I still haven't entirely decided what I believe about it. The hotel is a mid-sized property. 112 rooms. 6 floors. attached to a conference center that sits empty most weeknights. It's the kind of place that hosts wedding blocks on weekends and corporate retreats Monday through Wednesday, and then goes almost completely quiet by Thursday. The building itself is older, renovated in the mid-2000s, so it has that particular smell. Carpet cleaner and recycled air, and long corridors that absorb sound in a way that makes the whole place feel underwater after midnight. I had been awake for a long time that night. Not as long as some people go, but long enough. My daughter had an ear infection, and had been crying the night before, which meant my wife and I were both up, and neither of us had gotten more than maybe 90 minutes of broken sleep before I had to drive in for my shift. I'm not complaining. That's just the setup.
This episode sponsored by Little Sleepies. Little Sleepies makes getting your kids dressed a lot easier. Their signature bamboo fabric is incredibly soft, breathable, and gentle on sensitive skin. It stretches so kids can move comfortably all day, from playtime to bedtime. Parents love the smart details too, like double zippers and fold-over mittens that make diaper changes and getting dressed faster and easier. And because Little Sleepies are designed to grow with your child, they last longer than typical kids' clothes. Right now, discover the ultra-soft styles families swear by. Visit littlesleepies.com and find your new favorite pajamas today.
Hi everyone, this is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes, so for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Because it matters. The hotel was at 40% occupancy. Conference center was dark. Parking lot had maybe 20 cars. My coworker, a guy named Darren who does the overnight security walk, had already done his 11 p.m. round and come back to tell me it was quiet before settling into the back office to watch something on his phone. By 1 in the morning, I was alone at the front desk, running on stale coffee and that particular kind of tired that sits behind your eyes like pressure. Around 1:15, the elevator at the end of the lobby dinged. That happens sometimes. Guests come down for ice, for vending, for no reason at all because they can't sleep. I looked up from the desk, ready to give whoever it was a polite nod. The elevator door opened. The lobby was dim, the way it always is overnight, with the ambient light from the front entrance and the soft glow from behind the desk. I could see clearly enough. No one came out. I waited a few seconds, assuming maybe someone had hit the button from upstairs, and then decided not to come down. The doors closed. I went back to my monitor. At 1:40, I did my own walk. Darren's supposed to do a second round at 2, but I usually do a quick lap through the conference center side, just to feel like I've moved my legs. The conference center connects to the hotel on the second floor via an enclosed walkway. I hate that walkway at night. It's mostly glass, so in the winter you can feel the cold radiating through it, and because of the angle, the lighting through the parking lot hits in a way that makes your reflection appear and disappear depending on where you're standing. It's the kind of place your brain invents movement in your peripheral vision without any help. I was almost back to the door when I saw a woman sitting in one of the chairs in the far end of the conference foyer. Just sitting there in the dark, posture rigid, hands folded in her lap, facing toward the window that looks out to the side parking lot. I stopped. My first thought was that the guest had wandered over and maybe fallen asleep sitting up, which sounds impossible, but genuinely happens. My second thought, almost simultaneously, was that every door between the hotel and the conference center requires a key after 10 p.m., and I hadn't badged through any door that was already open. I had used my card each time. I took a step toward her. She was older, white hair, dressed in something dark, a cardigan maybe, the kind of thing that looks like it belongs from a different decade. She was very still. I called out, "Ma'am, are you a guest with us?" She didn't move. Not a flinch, not a turn of the head. I took two more steps and the lights in the conference foyer, which are motion sensors, clicked on automatically. and the whole space flooded with that flat fluorescent light. The chair was empty, clean, pushed neatly up on the edge of the round table like no one had touched it all day. I stood there for what felt like a long time. There was nowhere she could have gone. The exit doors are alarmed. The door back to the hotel walkway was 10 feet behind me and hadn't opened. She was there, and then she wasn't. I stood in that bright, empty room and felt something cold move through me that had nothing to do with the temperature. I went back to the desk and I didn't tell Darren, partly because I didn't know how to say it, and partly because I'd already started doing the math in my head. 31 hours without real sleep, close enough to the threshold where your brain starts generating things and presenting them to you as fact. I convinced myself. I almost had myself fully convinced. At 3 a.m., I was running the night audit, which requires me to essentially lock the system for about 20 minutes while the reports generate. During that window, I can't check anyone in, can't pull up reservations, can't do much of anything, so I usually just sit and wait. The lobby was completely silent. Darren had gone back to the office. The parking lot outside the front windows was still. Then the phone at the desk rang. It was our internal line. The 4-digit extension that guests use to call the front desk from their rooms. The display showed the room number, 614. We have 6 floors. We have 112 rooms. The 6th floor only goes up to room 608. I stared at the display. It rang 4 times. I picked it up and said the standard greeting, our hotel name. How can I help you? There was sound on the other end, not static. Not silence. Breathing. Low and slow, and deeply unhurried. The way someone breathes when they're not aware they're being heard. Then a voice. A woman's voice. Old and soft. Said something I've been trying to unhear ever since. She said, "The ice machine on my floor is broken." And then the line went dead. I stood up so fast my chair rolled back and hit the wall. I pulled the room list. I pulled it up twice. There is no 614. There has never been a 614. Our 6th floor rooms run from 601 to 608. I went into the call log to see if I could find the internal extension record.
This episode sponsored by Little Sleepies. Little Sleepies makes getting your kids dressed a lot easier. Their signature bamboo fabric is incredibly soft, breathable, and gentle on sensitive skin. It stretches so kids can move comfortably all day, from playtime to bedtime. Parents love the smart details too, like double zippers and fold-over mittens that make diaper changes and getting dressed faster and easier. And because Little Sleepies are designed to grow with your child, they last longer than typical kids' clothes. Right now, discover the ultra-soft styles families swear by. Visit littlesleepies.com and find your new favorite pajamas today.
Hi everyone, this is James and Dan. We are 2/4 of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes. So for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in 4 dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.
There was no log of an incoming call at 3:04 a.m. No record. Nothing. Darren came out around 3:30, and I had him do an early walk on the 6th floor. He came back and told me it was empty. All 8 rooms. Dark. Quiet. Undisturbed. He didn't find an old woman. He didn't find anything. I've looked into sleep deprivation hallucinations since then. I know what the literature says. I know the brain can generate voices, images, entire sensory experiences when it's been pushed far enough. I know this. But I also didn't imagine the call log disappearing. I know I didn't imagine seeing those 4 digits on the display. I've put a request to transfer to day shift. I'm still waiting to hear back. I was 19 the first time I ever felt like something was genuinely haunting me. Not a person. Not an animal. something that seemed to understand that I knew it was there. I'm 24 now, and I still can't explain what happened. I've told the story maybe 3 times total, and only to people I trust. My buddy Marcus was there for the whole thing. Without him, I'd probably convinced myself I'd imagined it. This was in rural Kentucky, maybe 40 minutes outside of Lexington. Marcus and I were heavy into exploring at the time. Abandoned farmhouses, old rail tunnels, condemned properties. We had a blog that maybe 12 people read. We drove out one Friday night in early November because someone on an Urbex forum had posted coordinates to an abandoned textile mill that had been sitting empty since the 80s. Supposedly, the whole complex was intact, and supposedly nobody ever went out there because the surrounding property was a maze of drainage ditches and overgrown access roads. The kind of place that discourages people naturally, without needing a fence. We got there around 11 at night. My truck sat alone on a gravel turnout off a 2-lane road with no name on the sign, just a county number. The mill was maybe a quarter mile through a field and into a thin tree line. We had done this 100 times. We knew the protocol. Stay calm. Stay quiet. Don't use the flashlights unless you absolutely have to. The mill itself was everything the forum post promised. 3 stories of old brick, most of the windows blown out, ceiling collapsed in sections. We moved through the ground floor for maybe 20 minutes, photographing machinery that turned to abstract sculpture under decades of rust and vine. It was a good night. Quiet. Cold. No wind. That's when Marcus grabbed my arm. He didn't say anything. He just held my arm and tilted his head toward the far end of the mill floor, where a long row of broken looms disappeared into the dark. I listened. Someone was playing a pipe. Not a flute exactly. Lower, earthier, like a tin whistle, but wrong somehow, like whoever was playing it had learned from a recording and never from another person. The melody was there, a real melody, structured, repeating, but underneath the structure something was slightly off in a way I couldn't name. A note held half a second too long, a phrase that resolved in a direction you weren't expecting. It was coming from deeper inside the building. My first instinct, I'll be honest, was that it was interesting. Some homeless guy who plays music. Weird, but not dangerous. Marcus looked at me and mouthed, "Let's go." And I agreed. We moved quietly back toward the entrance we'd used, a ground floor window frame we'd stepped through off a loading dock. We were 15 feet from the window when the music stopped. Not faded. Not wound down. Stopped like someone had pressed a button. The silence was immediate and heavy. And both of us froze in it without talking about it. That particular kind of silence is hard to describe unless you've experienced it. It wasn't the absence of sound. It was the presence of held breath. The whole building felt like it was listening back at us. We made it out. I remember exhaling when my boots hit the loading dock. Marcus hopped down ahead of me, and we moved fast across the field, back toward the tree line. I kept glancing over my shoulder at the mill's dark windows. Nothing. We were halfway through the trees when we heard it again. It was outside. That stopped me completely, because we had been moving for 90 seconds, maybe 2 minutes, through a field and into woods. And the music, that same melody, that same wrong resolution at the end of the phrase, was drifting through the trees from somewhere ahead of us and to the left. Marcus said quietly, "That's not possible." He was right. There was no way someone had gotten out of that building, around us, and ahead of us in time that we'd been walking, not without us seeing them cross the open field. The tree line was thin but not instant cover. We would have seen movement. We stood there in the dark and just listened to it play. The thing that cored me out wasn't that it was loud or close. It was the opposite. It was calm. Patient. The tempo never changed. Whoever or whatever was playing the pipe wasn't running. Wasn't rushing. Wasn't reacting to us at all. It sounded like someone playing in their living room. Marcus started moving toward the truck and I followed without debate. Here's the part that still bothers me the most. The music didn't get quieter as we walked away from it. For maybe 4 or 5 minutes as we pushed through the brush and back toward the gravel road, the volume stayed exactly the same. Not louder, not softer, the same. Like it was maintaining a constant distance. We broke out of the tree line and hit the gravel, and the music stopped again. My truck was sitting exactly where I'd left it. No other vehicles. No signs of anyone. The field and the road behind us were empty in both directions under a half moon. And I stood there scanning for a full minute because I needed to see nothing. And I needed to confirm something for me. I don't know what. I didn't find anyone. There was no one. Marcus got in the truck without a word, and I drove us back to the highway. We talked about everything other than what happened for about 10 minutes. The way you do when something shakes you, but you're not ready to name it yet. Then Marcus said, "It knew where we were going." I didn't answer him. But I've been thinking the same thing since we pulled off that road. Because our truck was the only vehicle out there. No houses nearby. No reason for anyone to be in that field at 11 on a Friday night. Whatever was in those woods didn't wander in after us. It was already there when we arrived. It heard our doors closed. It watched us cross that field. And it waited. Patient. Unhurried. Until we were deep enough inside before it let us hear it.
This episode sponsored by Little Sleepies. Little Sleepies makes getting your kids dressed a lot easier. Their signature bamboo fabric is incredibly soft, breathable, and gentle on sensitive skin. It stretches so kids can move comfortably all day, from playtime to bedtime. Parents love the smart details too, like double zippers and fold-over mittens that make diaper changes and getting dressed faster and easier. And because Little Sleepies are designed to grow with your child, they last longer than typical kids' clothes. Right now, discover the ultra-soft styles families swear by. Visit littlesleepies.com and find your new favorite pajamas today.
Hi everyone, this is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes, so for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.
That's the part I can't shake. Not what it was, but how long it already been watching before we ever knew to be scared. I went back to that forum post the next day to message the guy who shared the coordinates. His account had been deleted. I searched for any other post about the mill. There was nothing. Marcus and I still explore. But we have one rule we never discuss or negotiate. We're in the car before midnight. We've never talked about why. We don't need to.
Hi everyone, this is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes, so for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.